With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Southern California Live with Wendell. I have returned back to the radio after a couple of weeks hiatus and absence. I am here. Johnny Venom will not be joining us today. He is still settling in to his new palatial estate in Payson, Arizona. So it is just going to be me and you. We will get to standard Southern California fare shortly. However, as of 7:06 this evening, which is, as you can probably tell if you're looking at your iPhone or watch if you're old school, that's the time now. We have breaking news for you. According to the Washington Post and according to Fox News, two more accusers have surfaced of Judge Brett Kavanaugh, who, as we know, is up for a vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court, the seat vacated by the retiring Judge Anthony Kennedy, who stepped down at the end of this July. We know that this Thursday, Judge Kavanaugh's chief accuser, Professor Ford, is going to testify in front of the Senate this Thursday. She has consented. They are working out the final details as we speak. However, as of today, two more accusers of Judge Kavanaugh have surfaced, both with accusations of sexual assault. What we know so far, and bits and pieces of this are coming in, and I will keep you apprised of this as the show progresses, no matter what happens here, is that accuser number two is a 53-year-old woman by the name of Deborah Ramirez, who claims that at a party years ago when she and Kavanaugh were drinking, that he exposed himself and thrust his genitals uninvited into her face. Mr. Kavanaugh and his representatives are denying this and claiming that this is a hatchet job from the Democratic Party, who are trying to keep him out of this seat. That being said, today, via Fox News and via Raw Story, Stormy Daniels' attorney, Michael Avenatti, has revealed that he is representing another Kavanaugh accuser, a third. She has credible information about Mr. Kavanaugh, Judge Kavanaugh, and his high school friend, Mark Judge. According to Avenatti, and this is via Twitter, "I represent a woman with credible information regarding Kavanaugh and Mark Judge." Mark Judge is Judge Kavanaugh's friend. He's named Judge, but he's also Judge Kavanaugh's friend. And he allegedly was part of the assault on Professor Ford 36 years ago. He has declined to testify and is not subpoenaed. Okay, Avenatti tweets, "I represent a woman with credible information regarding Kavanaugh and Mark Judge. Will be demanding the opportunity to present testimony to the committee and will likewise be demanding that Judge and others be subpoenaed to testify. The nomination must be withdrawn." He said his client is not Deborah Ramirez, who came forward to Ronan Farrow in the New Yorker article that was published today. Ronan Farrow is the breaker of... he's Mia Farrow's son. And he is also the reporter who is credited with breaking the Harvey Weinstein story. Okay. She has alleged that Kavanaugh thrust his genitals in her face during a college party. She was horrified and humiliated as other students laughed at her and shouted down the hall, "Brett Kavanaugh just put his organ in Debbie's face." According to Ramirez, she wanted to save herself for marriage at the time and was embarrassed at what fellow students might think of her. Deborah Ramirez is the second, and that makes Avenatti's client, who has not yet been named, the third accuser. So this makes a very, very twisted, bizarre story that much more bizarre. The first accuser, as we know, is Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. She is the one who claims that she was held down by Judge Kavanaugh, before he was a judge, when they were in high school, put his hand over her mouth, turned up music to prevent anybody from hearing her screaming, and attempted to sexually assault her. How this actually plays out now is a matter of conjecture. We do not know what attorney Avenatti has. We don't know who his client is. Supposedly, there are rumors, these are the rumors that are floating about, that he will reveal that Kavanaugh and Judge assaulted this third woman together. That is what is floating around via internet scuttlebutt. We will know more about this, okay? Because as Avenatti has said, he has credible information regarding Kavanaugh and Mark Judge both, and he wants to present testimony to the committee. This is a political matter as much as it is a legal matter at this point. The fact of the matter is that if Kavanaugh, who is a 51-year-old judge, is actually successfully confirmed by Senate vote, he will theoretically serve 25 to 30 years on the bench. Brett Kavanaugh is absolutely beloved of the Republican Party's base. They adore him. They know that no matter what he has claimed in the past, he is the swing vote to overturning Roe versus Wade. That has been their dream for 40 years. Now they will have 5 votes against Roe on the bench as they see it. And there are at least a dozen cases pending before the Supreme Court which could weaken or overturn Roe versus Wade permanently. This makes his ascent onto the bench extraordinarily important for both sides of the political aisle. For the Republicans, if Kavanaugh is confirmed, and remember, Republicans have 51 votes in the Senate. They do. Since John McCain's passing, John Kyle has been appointed to fill his seat. He can show up and vote. If all 51 Republicans vote yes, Kavanaugh is confirmed. Democrats only have 49 votes. And if they peel one Republican away, and it is a tie, Vice President Mike Pence can cast the deciding vote. And he would in favor of Judge Kavanaugh. From the Democrats' point of view, on this Sunday night, a few days before Professor Ford is slated to testify in front of Congress, this is, from the Democrats' political point of view, absolutely a win-win. For the Republicans, it could very well be a lose-lose. It is true that they want to get their justice onto the Supreme Court. They want to overturn Roe versus Wade, among other decisions that they desperately want to change, especially weakening workers' rights, weakening unions, voting rights, gerrymandering, those kinds of issues. They want to rule from the Republican perspective. And they will have 5 hardcore Republicans on the bench. Anthony Kennedy was a Republican, but he tended to be a swing vote. You didn't know how he was going to vote. You know pretty much how Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and John Roberts are going to vote on this.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And also, one of the reasons that Kavanaugh is much prized by the Republican Party is he seems to believe that a sitting president cannot be indicted. That has endeared him to Donald Trump, as one would assume that it would. This being said, from the Republican point of view, yes, it is true, you end up with your fifth justice. On the other hand, you are now absolutely conceding in the midterm elections in November that the House of Representatives is going to flip to the Democrats. At this point, a Kavanaugh confirmation will absolutely enrage women swing voters in the suburbs, and that's where this election is going to be decided. The question is with two more accusers coming forward, if the Republicans ramrod this through, you are now also setting up the distinct possibility of the Democrats taking the Senate as well. And when we come back, we'll give you the mathematics of this. But do stay tuned as more information comes in. There are two more accusers. Judge Kavanaugh, stay tuned.
You're listening to The Patriot, AM 1150.
Oh, what a perfect song for the occasion. Huh? Now, I'm not going to break into it. Southern California Live with Wendell at 722. On The Patriot, KEIB AM 1150, Johnny Venom is still settling into his new digs in Arizona. I don't know if he's listening to us over the internet or not. He may very well be. If he is, I extend our invitation to him. If he likes, he can join us. But what we are talking about is a breaking news story that is sort of out of our purview. And we will return to local California-based stuff at the bottom of the hour. But as of right now, breaking all over the United States of America, apparently there are two more accusers of Judge Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault. One is a 53-year-old woman that he went to college with, I guess, named Deborah Ramirez. The third accuser is being represented by Michael Avenatti, who was, you know, Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' attorney. Mr. Avenatti has implied that Judge Kavanaugh and his friend, Mark Judge, both assaulted woman number three. It is entirely possible that by the time Professor Ford testifies to Congress on Thursday, that there will be more of these women. As we know from following the horrible, heinous, repulsive, disgusting Harvey Weinstein case, when it rains accusers to an abuser, it pours. We knew that there were going to be more than one. It also seems that in the issue of Professor Ford and Ms. Ramirez, that the judge was hammered because the issue of alcohol appears to have raised its head here, too. If Judge Kavanaugh is no longer a drinking man, it might behoove him in testimony to let the world know that he is not like that anymore. That is tangential to this case. What we do know now is that there are at least three women who are accusing this Supreme Court nominee of sexual assault. More will be revealed, and the credibility of Professor Ford will be on the line Thursday, as will be the credibility of these two other women. This is a long time ago. In defense of Kavanaugh, or as Kavanaugh's defenders would say, this is over 30 years ago. The Democrats are fishing. They know they can't stop this. This is a desperate Hail Mary move. You're seeing this all over Twitter. You're seeing this all over social media. You will undoubtedly hear this on talk radio tomorrow, that this is a sham, that this is a game. Anything to prevent Judge Kavanaugh from being seated on the Supreme Court. The problem is that while that line of reasoning does appeal to politics junkies considerably, you are looking at a particularly angry electorate already that does not like what they are seeing out of Washington, D.C., especially on the matter of women's issues. So if Judge Kavanaugh's champions in the Senate ignore accuser after accuser and ramrod him through, we know a few things. Firstly, from a political point of view, it means they have conceded that the Democrats are going to retake the House of Representatives in November. They are, and how do we know? We know this simply because where the Democrats are likely to make most of their gains in the House is suburbia. Democrats hold the cities. Republicans hold rural America. But in suburbia, the Republicans have done very, very well, especially in midterms in 2010 and 2014. However, if you are looking at swing voters who are women who went to college and have been in the workplace their entire adult life, a fair number of them have been sexually harassed, and a fair number of them have had sexual abuse issues as well. And they know that coming forward on this sort of thing is extraordinarily difficult. It is estimated that over 70% of sexual assaults in America go unreported. Most people, sad to say, wish that they would just go away. Seriously, they do. So what you will end up seeing is in suburban Philadelphia, specifically, suburban Los Angeles, especially in the parts of Orange County that have already turned blue in the last election, in the I-95 corridor in Southern Virginia, which is heavily populated by universities and university students, in the suburbs of Miami and Orlando, and Tampa, the suburbs of Houston, Texas, the suburbs of Dallas and San Antonio, Texas, you will be, and especially in Chicago as well, you will be conceding, if you are a Republican, that you are looking at losing what used to be 10% of your base to the Democrat, because the women of that district will be seething with fury. They will not be happy about this at all. Remember, there was a gender gap of 24 points in the last election. It will get wider, although it is being said by some pollsters that a lot of men are actually kind of angry about this too. Brett Kavanaugh, as we speak, has an approval rating in the United States of 31%. By Thursday, it would be closer to 21% if this is going to be on the news every day. Yet the Republican Party cannot possibly cut him loose, for one reason and one reason alone. Their base is determined that he become a Supreme Court justice, nullify or reverse Roe versus Wade. That's been their sacred cow, their holy grail for the last 40 years. And this is their golden opportunity, and they do not want to miss this. The problem with this political calculation is thus: if there are more women who come forward and the Senate ramrods Kavanaugh through over legitimate objections, the Republicans could also be conceding the Senate, because an awful lot of women in the suburbs of Nashville and Memphis, Houston, San Antonio, Austin, these could become, Texas and Tennessee become swing states. Women in the Senate like Heidi Heitelkamp in North Dakota, Claire McCaskill in Missouri, they're safe now. Republicans lose the Senate, say hello.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Go to impeachment in 2019. We'll get local when we come back. Southern California Live with Wendell, 7:30.
This is the Patriot, AM 1150.
He was a wealthy fellow.
He sure was.
They called his wife happy.
But she wasn't. Southern California Live with Wendell at 7:36. Patriot, KEIB, AM 1150. We will keep you up to date on this breaking story of multiple new accusers of Brett Kavanaugh, the would-be Supreme Court justice, as they come in. So far, there are two new ones that we know of. Not exactly a shock, but we will keep you apprised. However, an issue of far greater importance to Californians, that is those of us that have to put gas in our tanks, is whether or not we should support Proposition 6, which is on the ballot in November. It's the gas tax repeal. Okay. The Reform California group, headed by Carl DeMeo, says that the latest gas and car tax hikes are a crushing blow to working families. The additional cost to families includes $521 to $620 a year to pay the higher gas tax and vehicle fees, with an additional $124 to purchase food delivered by producers and trucking firms that pass along the cost. His opposition cites a Department of Finance report that estimated the gas tax increase, which, as we know, is going into fixing our particularly atrocious roads in this state, will cost California drivers about one-fifth of what DeMeo claims, about $120. Without the road repairs, there will be additional costs from fixing cars damaged by driving on deteriorating roads. This comes from the American Society of Civil Engineers. Kwame Aguirre, who is a regional director for the American Society of Civil Engineers, says, I know the price of costing doing nothing, fix our deteriorating roads and bridges, too high a price to pay. A separate analysis that didn't come from either DeMeo or his opposition, from California Budget and Policy, advocates for working people, Mr. DeMeo says that he is, says that approving Proposition 6 would significantly decrease funding available for transportation infrastructure. Rejecting 6 would allow California to continue to invest in highways, roads, bridges, transit, and other improvements. The group suggested that concerns about the tax's impact on low-income residents could be addressed by providing tax offsets, such as an expansion of the state-earned income tax credit. That's what they're saying. So what we have here is the between a rock and a hard place traditional position. We have Mr. DeMeo and his people saying that Proposition 6 must pass, that the gasoline tax is whacking working Californians. We have the opposition, who are engineers and the nonprofit policy group for the budget for California, saying that this isn't so. In reality, DeMeo is exaggerating the damage by about five times. I am an opponent, and always have been an opponent, of consumption-based taxes. Whether or not somebody drives a car in California or buys a gallon of gas at the pump is irrelevant to me. We all benefit or do not benefit by high or low gasoline prices. Therefore, sticking a tax at the pump is not going to help anybody, in my opinion. It isn't going to cut gas consumption because it really is. The gas tax increase was not significant enough to get people to use less. Maybe if they tacked on a $2 a gallon charge, people would drive less or they would buy electric vehicles, which, by the way, is another ancillary effect of this. If the gas tax gets high enough and charging stations proliferate in California, California drivers are going to buy electric vehicles, which means that a higher gas tax becomes moot. There isn't enough income that comes in as fewer and fewer people use gasoline. Can't use that to fund the roads. No. In reality, the best way for California to pay to repair its roads comes from a solution that is used by our fellow Americans in the states of Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Texas. And that is an oil extraction tax. What an oil extraction tax is, in a nutshell, it says that the oil that is beneath the feet of Californians or beneath the water off the shores of California, although there are bans on offshore drilling here, belongs not to the oil companies, but belongs to the people who live in California, you and I. If the oil companies wish to extract oil from underneath California, and we provide about 11 or 12% of the oil that is produced in the United States. Remember, I wouldn't say consumed in America. All oil that is produced everywhere goes into a general pot at this point. Oil is a fungible resource. We produce about 11 or 12% in California. We do not have an oil extraction tax. Our oil companies get away with this. Doesn't happen in Texas, doesn't happen in Louisiana, doesn't happen in Oklahoma. If we had an oil extraction tax that paid for the repaving of California roads, the shoring up of our bridges, and we saw, anybody saw what happened up in Big Sur on Route 1 knows that this is critical, or certainly being seismically retrofitted. There are certain parts of California roads that at this point cannot be shut down if we want to have reasonable commerce in this state. An oil extraction tax would mean that you could eliminate the gas tax. And because oil goes into a general fund or a general supply, a general pot, as it were, it would not be passed on at the pump. Or if it was, it would be a cent or two. Fact of the matter is, this is the superior solution. Problem is, oil companies don't like paying oil extraction taxes. It raises the cost of doing business. They will fight it tooth and nail. The problem is that in this particular instance, if the incoming governor, be it Newsom or Cox, has to make a decision between California consumers and the oil companies, in this particular instance, even the Republican, Mr. Cox, may decide to rule for consumers. Because we cannot have, you drive on the same roads I do. We can't have our roads remaining in these conditions. It literally, half of the roads in California are axle busters. The wheels and the bearings on both of my vehicles wear out about three times as fast as they used to when I was a driver in Massachusetts whose roads were cow paths at what point. So something has to be done. We do have to do something. You can't simply say, well, we'll repair on a as-you-go basis, or it'll come out of general revenue, or we'll farm it out to private industry. That's a biggie. That's not going to happen. It's not profitable enough. We don't have enough toll roads in California to pay for that. So if we were to impose an oil extraction tax in California, we would have the money to get rid of the gas tax. But if we do get rid of the gas tax via Proposition 6 in November, we're going to have a serious issue with fixing our roads. It has to be done. This isn't one of those things where you can say, well, we'll live with it. I know, and you know, that neither of us want to see that kind of wear and tear on our vehicles. Nobody wants to see bridges collapse. Nobody wants to see unsafe roads that our children, and I've got one who's about to learn how to drive, drive on. We also know, as I said in the last segment, that in this particular issue, a gas tax is not going to help us very much as gasoline consumption drops, which means that an oil extraction tax is probably just a bandage on the same situation. Eventually, this is going to have to come out of a general fund. We will have to have roads, even if electric cars and driverless cars are driving on it. They're still going to have to be usable. I understand people's anger at the gas tax. It's frustrating. It is enraging and infuriating to see the price of our gasoline higher than it is in neighboring states. But we've got to fix our roads. They're a mess. I don't know if you've been on the 10 freeway lately, or the 101, or the 110 heading out of town towards the airport. It's a nightmare. It's a minefield. It's like playing dodgeball behind the wheel of an automobile. It's a horror. We have to do this. And it costs money. We have a ridiculous amen corner among our politicians and among our punditry, not just in California, but everywhere in America, who like to complain ceaselessly about taxation. And why do they do this? Because nobody wants to be taxed. I work hard for my money. You do too. We earn it. We don't want it taken away for what we may perceive as a frivolity. In reality, we don't want it taken away, period. But the idea of having unsafe highways, the idea of having surface roads which destroy our vehicles, that can't happen. And also remember that California is a unique case. As I have said so many times, you're probably reaching for a barf bag right now, but one more time isn't going to hurt. We live in a very seismically active place. Our roads buckle and crack. We are also the sixth largest economy in the world, which means lots and lots and lots of trucking comes in from Mexico or from our ports in San Pedro, Long Beach, Oakland, San Diego, LA, wherever. Our roads get a lot of wear and tear. I don't like the gas tax either. I don't like paying through the snoot to fill up my vehicles. I really don't. But unless you have a device that paves roads for free, or the roads pave themselves, somebody somewhere has to pay for it. And I am really, really tired of people who go on the internet, go on the radio, go on television, ranting and raving about this as if the problem will go away if we just ignore it hard enough. It doesn't work like that. The roads ain't going to fix themselves. And yes, Virginia, we have to pay for them. The question is, how are we going to pay for them? What's reasonable? And who can you believe in which side of this particular argument? Because we have the get rid of the gas tax types claiming that the gas tax costs five times as much as everybody else. And I don't know about you, but even when I like what somebody has to say and I don't agree with, and I agree with their basic premise, and I would like to see the end of the gas tax. I admit it. I'm venal. I'm greedy. When I see figures that contradict each other, sometimes I realize my allies just might be lying too. Tell the truth. Southern California Live with Wendell at 7:55. We are talking about gas tax repeal, Proposition 6, yay or nay. Supporters of Proposition 6, which would repeal the measure, have released an analysis that they say costs working families between $520 and $620 a year, However, their opposition cite a Department of Finance report that says in reality it costs about $120 a year. Who do you believe? Who do you trust? Why don't we bring in a man off the street here? An everyman, a regular Joe, a working stiff. Our producer, Miguel. Miguel, you do a lot of driving as part of your other job, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I do.
Okay, which entails what?
So my other job is with a company called LifeTouch.
Yeah.
That name may sound familiar to the listeners because it's a school of photography.
Right.
Yeah. So I go to a lot of schools out in LA, Rancho, and sometimes the Corona area.
Okay, and what do you do?
And take pictures.
Oh, for IDs.
Yeah, okay. And for picture day.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. So,
but are you a photographer? Or
mm-hmm.
You are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Cool. I knew that you did that. I didn't. I thought you were like an assistant or something, or that you laminated all of these. But no, you are you're the man.
Then I have my own freelance photography.
Oh, very good. Very good. Okay. You do lots of driving. When the gas tax happened, how much do you reckon this tacked onto your gas bill per week?
I'm trying to really calculate the math here, but for sure, I'd say it added like an additional, because I do a lot of driving.
Yeah.
So I think within a week or within 2 weeks, it added an additional like $100.
$50 a week more, or are you saying that in those 2 weeks?
In two weeks.
In 2 weeks, your gasoline bill was $100.
Yeah.
It's like $50 a fill up. Right.
Well, no, because my truck, because I have a truck.
Ah, you have a truck.
So it takes a little over 80 right now.
The plot thickens.
To fill up my tank. But before the gas tax, it was anywhere between, depending on the gas station, 60 to 65.
Okay. So it's $15 more per fill up. So it's 30 every two times.
And I have to fill up about maybe twice a week.
Okay. That's tough.
Yeah.
This is putting the bite on you. Is it cutting into your profits? What are you doing to make up the difference?
Not really, because luckily at my job, every year that I've been there, they've given me like about a dollar raise.
Oh, so, okay.
You know, pretty good. Kind of makes up for the difference that that I pay for the gas, and they also pay me for my mileage. So
what is your take on Proposition 6?
I don't like it.
Why?
Think we should repeal it just because. I mean, for me,
yes.
Basically, you know, originally it was like, what, 275, two something before. And then now at some places I'm paying like almost a dollar more, like 360, 350.
Okay. Yeah. I know it's about 345 in our neighborhood.
It just honestly depends on where you go to. But it's, okay. I mean, personally, because for me, it's, you know, I definitely get, you know, a hit of it.
All right. Understood.
Mm-hmm.
So even though this is expensive for you and has made your life increasingly difficult as a driver, you don't believe that Proposition 6 is the way to go. What would you suggest?
I can't really think of anything on the top of my head. But
if there were if the state had a general fund to repair its roads that did not come out of gasoline taxes, that came out of something else.
Yeah.
You would, and the price of a gallon of gas went down to $2.75 again, you'd be pretty happy.
I would be pretty happy.
You'd be pretty happy. Question.
Mm-hmm.
Last question, then we got to go. Has this made you more likely to look into purchasing an electric vehicle the next time around?
Oh, yeah. I wish I'm getting a hybrid for sure next time, something like that.
There you go. Very, very good. Okay. We have now heard the working man's opinion.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Yeah. Kills me to say that about Miguel. Southern California Live with Wendell. It is 8 p.m. Stay tuned. Southern California Live with Wendell. Patriot, KEIB AM 1150, America's finest radio station. And hopefully, by this time next week, we'll have new bumper music. me and the boys recorded 5 new songs. So hopefully, we'll have much greater to pick from. Or that is to say, our engineer will have much greater to pick from. New noise from Johnny and the boys. The LA Times is telling us that voting yes on Proposition 10 is a must. Now, you, of course, are curious as to what this is, which leads me to believe that you don't watch much television because opponents of Proposition 10 are spending a boatload of cash. Okay, what Proposition 10 says is that it would repeal the Costa-Hawkins Rental Housing Act. This is about 23 years old. 1995 law restricts cities' abilities to enact or expand rent control. Costa-Hawkins bars cities from imposing rent control on apartments built after 1995 or earlier in cities that already had rent control in place, forbids rent control on single-family homes and condominiums, and prohibits vacancy control, which is when a unit's rent stays capped even after the tenant moves out. Under Costa-Hawkins, L.A. cannot impose rent control on apartments built after 1978 when rent stabilization ordinance went into effect. Now, tenants' rights advocates have complained that Costa-Hawkins ties the hands of local officials so they can't respond when rents and displacements surge in their community. This should ring a bell pretty loudly in your skull when you hear about displacement. We have 60,000 homeless people in Los Angeles, 3/4 of which are working people. They've been displaced. They cannot afford a place to live in Los Angeles, or they just plain don't exist, partially because rents have become astronomical and rental units are becoming Airbnbs by the bucket load every week. Okay. We have an affordability crisis. Nearly 1 in 3 households statewide spends more than half their income on rent, leaving many families one rent increase away or missed paycheck away from being evicted. And in much of California, rents are rising faster than incomes. State lawmakers have failed to enact even modest tweaks to Costa-Hawkins that would give cities the option to prohibit exorbitant rent increases, whether they're permanent or whether they're temporary. This law, in effect, ties the hands of cities. So I would say that the part of me that really, really dislikes laws that were rammed down people's throats with horrific consequences should be rescinded as fast as humanly possible. And getting rid of Costa-Hawkins is probably a pretty good idea. If the city of Los Angeles or the city of San Diego or the city of San Francisco wants to impose rent control or rent stabilization, they should be able to do so. There are massive issues with homelessness and with price in these cities. Fact of the matter is that there aren't enough units for people to buy, and most people in California can't afford a home in California anymore because they're just too expensive. Our producer, Miguel, came in and he showed me a, Miguel, well, that was in Inglewood, this particular home, right?
Yes, Inglewood by the 105.
Inglewood by the 105. Not exactly Bel Air or Brentwood. No.
No, not at all.
And this is an empty, vacant home being gutted out, selling for, what, about $700,000, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is what we're up against. If you wanted to move into that place, it's not habitable. So if it were, it would be selling for over $800,000 as Inglewood. All right? This is not in the center of the city. This is on the periphery of the city. this is what we are looking at in California. This is what we're looking at in Los Angeles. We're looking in Southern California. We have incredibly rapidly rising home prices for the last 9 years or so. When we got socked in the recession of 2008, housing prices started to come back down to earth. The thing is, the economy in California recovered very – we got hit badly in the recession. I've been on this radio station 13 years. I've been following this story fairly closely way, way back. You know, I'm on my third president right now on this radio station. And fact is that while housing prices have recovered – and rents have soared, as you and I well know, wages have not kept up in California. I don't see how they possibly could. So when you have measures that prohibit any kind of rent rejiggering so that the average person who cannot afford a home, of which that is the majority of working people here and everywhere else, that they are not priced out of their apartment unit for a variety of reasons, namely that as units get taken off the market, there are fewer of them, which, as we know, via the law of supply and demand, are going to become more expensive. Either units become condominiums, they become co-ops, they become Airbnb. I think that getting rid of this artificiality, which is really what Costa Hawkins is, this Rental Housing Act. It is a preventative that theoretically helps landlords stay solvent. Except at this point, the solvency of our landlords is not the issue in Southern California. The issue is people can't afford to live here and work necessary jobs. If you are a first responder in Southern California, you have trouble making ends meet. We can't live without police and fire. We can't live without EMTs. We can't live without orderlies. We can't live without nurses. We have no quality of life. If municipal workers, you know, the people who take care of your streets and haul your trash, or those who work for the DWP, if they can't afford to live here anymore, we have problems. And we've seen in San Francisco that now you have people who are commuting over 50 miles a day in order to get to their jobs up north. We can't have that here. If the county of Los Angeles or the city of Los Angeles wishes to impose some form of rent stabilization or rent control, regardless of the unit, the city should have that right. And if voters don't want rent control, they can vote rent control out on a per-election basis. That's part of participatory democracy for all intents and purposes. Why not? But to have an artificial constraint which says we can't even talk about this, it isn't going to happen. What you end up is a situation where landlord holds all the aces and the tenants have no theoretical rights. Raise my rent anytime you want. You know, we're in a rent stabilization unit, but there are all kinds of outs. And by the way, they don't exist for the other people who live in our building because they've come and gone. This is a dangerous situation. We don't want to get to the place where you have six figures worth of people, over 100,000 people living on the streets of Los Angeles. Those are conditions that are rife for civil unrest, for epidemics, and that are just plain lousy for the quality of living, not just for the people who are indigent living on the street, but for all of us. We don't want our city to look like Baghdad. We don't want our city to look like Aleppo or Damascus. We don't want people who are like an endless caravan shuffling their feet from place to place. We don't want that. And if this means placing constraints on how much a landlord can charge for rent or how many units they can make Airbnb, so be it. It is for the good of the health of our city. And I know there are lots of those among us who say, no, this is an unfair restriction. It is a hamper on the laws of supply and demand. The free market will take care of this. The free market will not take care of this. Not quick enough to ameliorate the situation that exists. If it could, it would have. Because after all, Costa Hawkins has existed for 23 years. But it doesn't. It doesn't work. Sometimes you have to impose controls to prevent chaos, bedlam, anarchy. All of those things sound very romantic, like, oh, it'd be fantastic. It'd be like the wild, wild west. No, it wouldn't. It would just be your street being nothing but a boulevard of people going from place to place, tent to tent, box to box. And every single neighborhood, and we saw this in the fires in the hills in West L.A. Doesn't matter what neighborhood you're in. You're talking about multi-million dollar homes. They were destroyed in fires because homeless encampments went ablaze. The problem goes deeper than rent control. We actually have to have as many new units built in Southern California as possible. We have to figure out a way for our infrastructure to accommodate this kind of building. We may have to look at the idea, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, of building a brand new city on the outskirts of Los Angeles up above the Grapevine. That may have to be done. These are all options we got to look at. But one thing that you've got to get rid of is the idea that you can't control rents in a situation where people are one paycheck away from being evicted constantly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Southern California Live with Wendell. I'll be back. Stay tuned. Luckily, my mic was not on 20 seconds ago. You'd agree with that, wouldn't you, Miguel? It's probably better.
Yeah, we would all would have been kicked out.
Yeah, that's true. You know, but you got to be passionate about stuff. I've been talking about Proposition 10, whether or not to get rid of this Costa Hawkins Act. It effectively prevents municipalities from imposing rent control, especially on newly constructed buildings or buildings constructed in the last 40 years. I think we got to figure out some kind of housing policy in California. Things have to change. We can't. It's fascinating. We cannot deal with the messes that we've made by ostrich anymore. We can't stick our heads in the sand anymore and expect this stuff is going to go away. Our roads have to get fixed. We have to build housing that people can afford to live in. We got to get homeless people off the street here and in the Bay Area, everywhere. It is it's a problem in Orange County. It's become insane in Orange County. Big, broad boulevard, beautiful suburban Orange County got thousands of homeless people. San Diego, thousands of homeless people. We have to do something about this. Housing units are not going to build themselves. We have to have a legitimate housing policy. So I got to tell you, with the elections coming up November 6th, I'm going to watch what Newsom and Cox say about this stuff. Because these are serious problems. I noticed that Jerry Brown's flurry of activity in the last few weeks around the edges. But his time's up. There has to be a housing policy. There has to be an infrastructure policy in California. We have to figure out exactly what we need to do, how we're going to afford it, and do it. Enough of this piddly crap nonsense about social issues that don't necessarily affect us. Who is more liberal or conservative on abstract social issues? It doesn't matter. Who is going to figure out how to build enough housing so that Los Angeles can house a half a million new residents, because that's what we're going to get in the next 6 or 7 years, plus get people off the street. The state of California currently has about 40 million residents. We're going to have 50 within the next 15 or 16 years. What are you going to do to accommodate this? Where are you going to find the water for these people? How are you going to find an infrastructure that feeds them? How are you going to have roadways that are not blocked around the clock a la Shanghai? Ever seen a photograph of Shanghai, China at 3:30 in the morning? Yeah, looks like the 405 freeway at 7:30 in the morning. It does. It's that bad. It wasn't built to accommodate what it has. And we are not going to shrink significantly in population. Yeah, there are exoduses of people from California, but guess what? For every 10 people that leave California, 12 more come back. That's the issue. People really do want to live here. We have high taxes. We have a crappy infrastructure. We have a housing shortage. It's really expensive to buy food here. We have industries that are dying that used to support Californians. But you know what? People just plain love it here. They love the topography. They love the weather. They love the feeling. That is not going to change. It has to be accommodated. We have to have policies that come not just from the top down, that come from Sacramento, but that come from us in our neighborhoods. We need X amount of new housing units. We need to start one-waying streets in order to cut down on traffic. We need to figure out a way to make our infrastructure accommodate all of the people that are coming. We have to figure out how we are going to deal with a situation in our state where one out of every four people who works a certain kind of job in this state in 10 years is looking at that job being obsolete and lives here and has children here and has family here and who wants to make their future here. We have to figure out how we're going to water our crops up north and prevent people from dying of thirst in the south. We don't have enough water here. We actually have to look at our politicians, at the two men running for governor this year, not, oh, I like him, he's a Republican. Oh, I've always voted for the Democrat. I'll vote for the Democrat because that's what I do. Forget it. I want these two guys to tell me what they are going to do about my state. Tangible things. What are you going to put forth that's realistic, that can happen, that is going to improve the quality of life? That's what I care about. Southern California Live with Wendell. We will be back. It is 8:30 on The Patriot.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
KEIB AM 1150. Please stay tuned.
No fun. You're listening to The Patriot, AM 1150.
Yeah. Ooh, you dug out an oldie but goodie, Phil. Haven't heard OK by Me in ages. Good for you. Southern California Live with Wendell, where we critique our bumper music. That's something that you don't hear very much. On the other hand, as I'm the manufacturer of the bumper music, why wouldn't I comment on it? Thanks to Miguel and Phil for helming me through this week back after, no, week, not my back isn't weak, week back after 2 weeks off. So it's like riding a bike, though. You never forget. You come right back. We started off the show talking about this massive bombshell of a news story. I don't know if you're aware of this. Be careful when you hear this if you're in your car and you're on the freeway. Apparently, there are multiple new accusers of would-be Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. As we know, a Professor Ford that says that 36 years ago, when she was 15 and in high school, that Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her. She is going to be she's going to testify on Thursday. However, now we have two other women. One is named Deborah Ramirez. She's 53 now, and her accusations are rather disturbing about Mr. Kavanaugh. She claims that he jammed his genitals in her face, she says, while a room full of people thought this was hilarious. She didn't say anything. She was embarrassed. And we have two senators now, Dianne Feinstein of California 1 and Jeff Merkley of Oregon being the second, saying that hearings should be postponed this week until these are investigated and that perhaps Mr. Kavanaugh should withdraw his name from nomination to the Supreme Court. That isn't going to happen. As far as Mr. Kavanaugh's champions are concerned, what happened 35, 36 years ago isn't relevant. It's not important. It doesn't make any difference. There's no hard proof that this actually ever happened, and it is a witch hunt led by the Democratic Party in order to destroy and besmirch a good man. That's what Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, not Southern Carolina, South Carolina. Lindsey is all in with the idea of Kavanaugh here. As we saw with Harvey Weinstein many, many months ago and the Me Too movement, this is how this stuff starts. It comes from one accuser, and where there's one, there's multiple. We also know that in his youth, Judge Kavanaugh drank a lot. So has been revealed in a book by his friend, Mark Judge. Whether he does or does not now, we don't know. We also know that there have been revelations from those who clerked for him that said that he made a production out of preferring pretty female clerks working for him. We also know that his staff right now, some of the people who work for him as we speak, are refusing to talk, fearing reprisals. But most of all, what we know is that Judge Kavanaugh is a political hot potato right now. If the president is forced to withdraw his name from consideration, which supposedly a fair amount of his staff wants him to do, especially his daughter, Ivanka Trump, she said, cut bait and run. Get rid of him. Nominate somebody else. There are dozens of other people that you could appoint that have this guy's point of view without the baggage. But to do that would be to lose one that the Democrats would have won. And ultimately, the Republican Party base cannot stomach that possibility. That's right, man. That's where we stand right now. Our politics has become a game. Whoever wins, yeah. Whoever loses, oh. Not what is best for the United States of America, but who won. Who goes on Twitter and brags? Who says, your tears, I swim in them? Who says things like, you can't handle this kind of defeat? We've won, you've lost, and then inevitably, get over it. That's what you see on social media on these issues. Not, are these credible accusations? You don't see that. What you see is, from people who do not want Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, he's judged guilty. from those who really want him on the Supreme Court, there's no evidence he did what he did. We don't need hearings. Vote already. This is a Democrat smokescreen. That's what you see. As far as I'm concerned, these charges are really, really serious. And they should be investigated. The idea that they may or may not be a smokescreen can be determined by the FBI in about 48 hours. That's true. That's about as long as they take. And yet we have the government, the White House, stonewalling on this particular issue. We have two new accusers that have come forward, one of which supposedly details her accusations that would implicate not just Kavanaugh, but his friend Mr. Judge as well. This is serious business. We saw in the Harvey Weinstein thing, one accuser, two, multiple. We saw in the Bill Cosby case, over 40 women had been sexually abused by Cosby. This is a massive, serious, horrible problem in our society. Sexual abuse is not a laughing matter. And it's not a matter of, I look the other way because if I take it seriously, my home team may be deprived of a victory. I would like to see all of these accusations that are leveled at someone who is getting a lifetime appointment. Brett Kavanaugh cannot be voted out of his job once he is confirmed. He can be impeached and he can be removed. It is true. But I don't want him in there in the first place if this stuff is true. I don't want somebody, yes, I understand he was a kid. Kids make terrible mistakes. I see this all over Twitter and Facebook myself. Hey, didn't you make youthful mistakes, John? Yeah, I made a ton of them. But you know what they didn't include? Rape. That's a moose of a whole nother hue. That is a serious issue, no matter how old you are. Not just that it goes to poor judgment or drug and alcohol consumption. None of that. It is a violent crime perpetrated against somebody incapable of defending themselves or unable to defend themselves or is put in a position where if they actually say anything, their lives are ruined. This ridiculous, idiotic Trump tweet about how if this were so, why didn't this girl go to the authorities back in 1981, 1982? You and I both know why. It was something you didn't bring up back then because you knew nobody would believe you. Or they would automatically take the side of the child, especially the male child, of the wealthy and powerful against you. Whether you like it or not, that's true. Whether you like it or not, 3/4 or so of sexual assaults are not reported to anybody. They're humiliating. They are soul-crushing. They're destructive. And you know what? Here's an interesting statistic you probably have never heard. Miguel, put your mic on. I want to ask you something, if you don't mind. I know you're really busy doing something, but if you don't mind, here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What percentage of sexual assault claims, don't Google this, are fake, manufactured, phony, made up to destroy somebody? What percentage of them turn out to be fake?
I would say like maybe 10%.
6.
Oh, okay. That was kind of close.
Yeah, okay. 6%, man. 1 out of every 16 is fake. Now, if you're Brett Kavanaugh or Mark Judge, and you now have 3 accusers, that whittles that percentage way, way down. There is also the possibility at this point that there are witnesses who were at these events and do remember. Now, if you are a Republican senator, you're willing to overlook all this. You don't care. Let's get on with the vote. This isn't important. I know you're a freaking politician and you don't have a conscience in the first place, so I'm not going to go down the road with, well, you're going to have to answer to your conscience or answer to your God or answer to whatever you believe in. These people believe in nothing other than being reelected Republican or Democrat. I'm sorry. He said, Johnny, that is cold-hearted cynicism. They're human beings, too. They have principles. No, they do not. They are addicted to power. They don't care. They have no principles. Rule one in politics, get elected. Rule two in politics, stay elected. Because rule three, if I'm not elected, I have no say. Nobody comes to me for anything. I'm done. Those are truisms. I would defy you to take me up on those. And you have politicians right now who are doing the mental calculus. If I go along with these women, these are Republicans, not Democrats. Democrats get a pass on this one because they can say, yeah, we believe her. That's what their base wants. The Republican base wants Brett Kavanaugh to win. They believe that he will reverse Roe versus Wade, that he will be a firm supporter in the idea that even if Donald Trump committed felonies, he can't be indicted. He believes that, believes the president can't be indicted. They love him for this. That's fine. But the fact is, the electoral calculus goes somewhat like this. If you look the other way when multiple women are saying this man sexually assaulted me, a rather enormous amount of women will hate you. Want to know why? Because millions of them didn't report their assaults either. But they remember them. They remember the details. It's not all that fuzzy. And when they go in to pull the lever or punch out the Chad or whatever on November 6th, they'll remember. And if they're Republicans and a Republican says no to Kavanaugh, they'll be angry. You cost me a win. I was going to make fun of the libs for a week on Twitter and you cost me that. I won't vote for you. See? We are entering into really interesting times politically in America where theoretically you could have a serial sexual abuser judging other people's right or wrong on our highest court. How about that? We'll be back with Miguel's Social Life. It's 8:49.
You can dye your hip pink.
Southern California Live with Wendell at 8:55. And we bring you a sterling segment of 4 minutes and change in length, Miguel's Social Life. Our producer, Miguel.
Hello.
Reveals to the world the extent of his activities. Sir, it would appear that your best friend, your lady friend that you talked about upping the platonic into the romantic, is now back in the States.
Yeah, she came back, I believe it was last week, or no, 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
All right, Chuck Berry, she's back in the USA. That being said, so have you decided to make the leap into lover's leap, or are you backing away from that?
Well, I do acknowledge that I still have some feelings for her.
Okay.
I do acknowledge that.
And how does she feel about this?
Well, I haven't told her that. I'm saying for myself.
Oops.
Yeah, oops. Right. But I do, like, you know, I know that I have feelings for her, but personally for me, I don't think I will still let her know that I have feelings.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're just going to keep lying then.
Not lying. I mean, she knows.
Okay, she knows.
But
she, how many times have you seen her since she came back from Korea?
I saw her yesterday and today.
Okay.
And then I'm seeing her again tomorrow.
Very good. Are there other women in your life besides her?
Like what do you mean? Like interested in?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
That you're intrigued by, that you fancy, that you seek out.
She's like the only one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, there are other girls who like I'm down to like hang out with, and what I mean by hang out is
sleep with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But she's the only one that I would be interested in pursuing, you know, something serious.
And she is aware that you still feel this way, and she's proximitous to you now. The Pacific Ocean doesn't divide you guys anymore. Mm-hmm. Therefore, given how you feel and given that she's... How far away is she from you geographically?
Well, I live in Pasadena, and she lives in Pomona. It's like 20 minutes.
Okay, so that's without probably, traffic. That's 20, 25 minutes down the heinous 210 freeway.
Yeah.
Or the 10. So... Mm-hmm. You're a hop, skip, and a jump away from her.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, there are no barriers to you becoming romantically involved with her other than her feelings.
I guess so.
Okay, so I know this, you know this, Phil knows this as well. Mm-hmm. Phil, I have a question for you. Knowing what we know about this situation, how does Miguel manage to sway or to convince this fine young lady that she and he should become an item as opposed to being forever lodged in the friend zone? What should he do?
Start dating someone else.
The grass is always greener angle, eh?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Miguel, have you considered this gambit?
I mean, I have just because... Again, I put everything out there.
Yeah.
I was very straightforward. I'm very straightforward about, you know, when it comes to feelings.
I see.
And, you know, I know my self-worth.
Okay.
Which is, you know, maybe a weird thing to say.
But you understand what your position is in all of this, and you understand
right.
what leverage and advantage you have and what you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then I think personally that if we're to become something more, it honestly has to be come from her.
Okay.
To say something.
And as we speak, the odds on that happening, the likelihood of that happening on this particular day in September are what?
I think zero.
Zero.
Yeah.
In other words, the vibe that you get from her is that she has no interest in upping this into something more serious.
I don't think it's that she doesn't, but it's just that I don't think, just the type of person she is, I strongly believe that she just doesn't have it in her to tell me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree with Phil. I think that you got to lay your cards on the table, be completely honest with her. Whatever happens, you accept.
Yep.
That's it. That's my take on it. I'm not a genius. It's what I know. We'll be back next week.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.